Welcome to another edition of our program, Dare to be Different, and it's just wonderful to have all of you tuning in, whether it's via the audio streaming midway 1548 Satellite Islam, and to those of you on the DSTV book 826 Center. We have a bit of the chill already creeping upon us, and I'm not too sure what the weather will hold for the next couple of days, but we've been very fortunate. I don't know if that's a continuation of an Indian summer or whether we're having midwinter yet, but we've got a wonderful guest this morning to chat to us, and it's always inspiration to be chatting to her. Lots to share, lots to talk about, and I know some of you are still curled up in bed, others around the breakfast table. I don't know how many of us have ventured and gone out into the garden as yet, but if you have and you'd like to join our conversation, number tonight this morning, 854-1548. We're taking lots of things, gardening. And online with us is Carrie Goodwin. Hi, good morning, Carrie.
How are you?
Very well, thank you. And I said, I don't know, the chill creeping upon us, Indian summer, or are we getting to midwinter?
I was a little bit betwixt in between, because I think I would like to say it should be midwinter. I think we need a cold to try and get rid of the pests in our environment. We have so many customers at the moment who are still coming in with aphids on their plants, whether it be their vegetables or on their lemon trees, and you know, just even on their general plants, like maybe some of the gardenias. And I'm thinking, oh goodness, we shouldn't be having aphids now. It's the middle of winter. So I'm hoping that maybe the cold will just, you know, break their life cycle so that we could start spring afresh and pest-free. But I'm not sure if it's going to happen or not.
So it's Hoha's paradise at the moment.
Yes, it is. It's unbelievable. I mean, the whole winter I've been waiting for a cold. See, I don't like putting a lot of pesticides into the environment, and especially because so many more people are growing vegetables and trying to go organic and, you know, really looking after their health as well as the health of their gardens. Then we need the weather to cooperate with us. It's difficult to do it against the weather.
Definitely, and when you look at, you know, some of the things, like you said, some portions, maybe not all portions, but some of your portions of our gardens still look like it's midsummer, so you're looking still fuchsias in bloom,
oh,
herbs
geez.
Still along, I still have basil, and, you know, so
wow.
All of those things still growing, so I don't know, is it confusion? Am I confused, or I'm not too sure? And then look around, you find some of these beautiful plants still, you know, the begonias are still, some of them, still thriving. I know, whilst I look at that and look at the orchids coming up, so there seems to be
beautiful.
Oh, yeah. Fantastic. So you're looking at all of those cyclamens coming up, and you have the winter, and not too sure how you read that.
I think the plants themselves actually don't even know if it's winter or summer. Because, I mean, and not only in our gardens, but if you just look generally around, like in the felt and when you're driving, you know, some of the blossom trees have started to come into blossom already, but then you still have your winter flowering aloes looking amazing. So I think even the plants are saying, well, what do we do? And in their stress, because it is going to be a stress state, because they're confused, is their natural response is, let me flower. Because if I'm flowering, then I'm going to be producing seeds and I'm going to be spreading, you know, spreading myself further no matter what happens with the weather. So I think at the moment when I walk around the nursery, I just think I feel so privileged to be in the environment in which I am because it's glorious. I even said to our team yesterday, because yesterday was a great day for gardening. Actually, every day at the moment seems like a great day for gardening. And we were just walking around and I said, you know, I wouldn't want to be doing anything else in the whole world to be surrounded by such beauty at this time of the year when it's normally all dark and gray and all the grasses are brown. And, you know, when you have friends come to Gauteng in winter, they're like, ugh, how can you live here? And I'm thinking, how can you not live here? It's gorgeous. So, yeah, we really are quite privileged.
Yes, and you know, like somebody said to me, we're so privileged that, you know, what we regard as winter weather, other regards as spring and, you know, getting to beginning of summer in the Northern Hemisphere. And I said, definitely, it's privileged.
No, it is. And there's so many different plants around that are actually looking amazing at the moment, like you were saying, with the orchids. So normally, generally, you have only your cymbidiums that look fantastic in the winter. But, I mean, we've got the cymbidiums that are looking good, and then our phalaenopsis are looking, you know, the moth orchids are incredible. And then even the little oncidiums, which are also looking good. So it doesn't matter if it's inside or outside your home. The plants that you have are actually generally just performing for you and making you feel great. I find plants make me feel great. Whether they're green or colorful, I just get that warm, fuzzy feeling inside.
And like I was saying, you know, I had a guest last week saying, you know, even when looking out at the starkness of the trees, there's such a beauty in it. You know, you find that it may not have the leaves on it, but it's beauty in its own. You know, if we just find the skeleton, and you find there's lots that you can admire in that.
Yeah, it always makes me think in the winter of the deciduous trees, because often when you think the trees lose their leaves, then you're like, oh, that must be horrible. But then you look at the bark of the tree, and like of the Pride of India, the Logostromia. Mm-hmm. How beautiful is that bark in the winter as a backdrop? Or even the leopard trees. You know, again, you've got this gorgeous bark that's kind of peeling, or the silver birches. There's just, as you say, there's beauty in the starkness even. And, we're very, very lucky to have these changes that occur in our garden.
Now, just before we came on, you know, I was looking at the weather, and I had on the newscast as well that they're talking about a cold front coming in. Now, you know, we haven't had the cold, we haven't had the frost, and we haven't had black frost. You know, I remember one year, particularly on the, I think it was, and I remember the date very well, it was 24th of May, about two or three seasons ago, when we had our first black frost. Now we're talking of getting on almost to the end of July, and we still haven't had any sign of frost, you know, whether it's just the normal or the black frost. Do you think there's an indication it will still happen, and what would happen to people, you know, to plants? Do we still take the necessary precautions? Do you still take the frost covers off? Do you leave them? What do you suggest?
I was going to say, we still put in the frost cover on, even though there hasn't been frost, just as a precaution, because even you just never know what happens. And we did have a tiny, tiny little bit of frost, I think it was about 6 weeks ago, and we were warned about that, and that was, even our sales for our frost cover came very late. And I see when I'm driving around, a lot of people, you know, they're not actually even taking it off during the day. They just leave their frost cover on their plants, especially the frost-sensitive ones, the whole day. And we normally carry on with this at least until maybe the first or second week of August, depending on how the weather changes. So I wouldn't like to, at this stage, say, oh, no, take your frost cover off. It's going to feel like spring. Because, you know, we often do get that cold either in September or in August. And imagine having nurtured your plants for the whole of winter, and then the one night that you think, oh, can't be too cold, your plants get damaged. So the thing with it getting cold, and then actually we're almost going to be in spring, is that they will recover quickly. So, you know, brief pruning and the plants will come back. But I would rather still try and protect them a little bit so the damage is minimized.
Well, somebody said to me the other day, 6.5 weeks to spring. Is that correct?
Yay! I can't wait.
Yeah, so that's what it is, 6.5 weeks. But like you said, anything could happen with the weather. And now that we've gotten, I know the newscaster said that there would be a cold, you know, how long that cold snap would last, I'm not very sure. But again, I think, like you said, take the necessary precautions. Don't think, well, we've had all this mild winter, it's not going to happen. It can still happen.
Yes, and you know, the one thing I miss, because I feel we should have seasons, I miss going outside in the mornings and seeing my pansy flower faces frozen.
You know, yes,
I think they just look like they're okay, but they're not. They get that harsh, really nice when they freeze because of the frost, and then when they open up, then they really do look like faces. Now they open up and they look like they're struggling to wake up because they haven't got cold enough at night. And so, you know, little things like that, I think that our winter plants, they're looking good, but they're not reaching their full potential. Although I say that, I looked at the primulas yesterday. The primulas are looking amazing at the moment. Just this field of purple and white and soft pink colors. I'm thinking, wow, they really are enjoying the mild winter. But our pansies, to me, they're just not amazing. They're like 80%, 90% amazing.
Yeah, they seem to be struggling. But again, I must say to you, and I think what you said at the very beginning, we definitely need this cold. We need the intensity of the cold, because if it's not, are we going to then have a summer plague with lots of the insects that haven't died down? And that's a concern. And like you said, the aphids are still around. They haven't died. So come up and we'll sort of see a multiplication of this, and it may lead to other challenges in the summer.
Yes. Well, you know what we had, the woolly aphid on the lemon trees.
Mm-hmm.
So then I had a customer who phoned in about March and said she'd seen that same sort of aphid on her Celtus africana, the white stinkwood.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, oh, no, it can't be. It's an indigenous plant. And, you know, the aphids purely on the lemon trees. And then soon after her phone call, I had another customer who came into the nursery and brought me a whole leaf of a Saltus africana tree that was covered in aphid. And I just, you know, when you just get that sinking feeling in your heart and you just think, oh no, what is happening here? And so it does seem that our pests, you know, maybe there's just not enough lemon trees, or we were so focused on the lemon trees that now they've adapted themselves and they are moving on to other plants. And so we just have to be conscious of that. And yeah, the cold will help with, contribute to actually trying to get rid of them.
Yes, and like you said, you know, we don't want to, you know, add, there's enough of, you know, of these pesticides in and, you know, so forth. And we don't want to add more to that. So that's a big concern.
Yeah, and I think, you know, with, when you're using pesticides, you just have to remember also to use them wisely, because you do, at some stage, you just get desperate. And we've had a few customers who've just got desperate with ants. Their ants this year seem to be really, really quite bad.
Yes, definitely.
And mice. We've had a lot of people who've been complaining about mice or rats in their gardens. And then I think, oh, no, you don't want to put anything down for those, because we see a lot of owls around in our environment, so you don't want to put anything down that will, you know, hurt the owls. So people are saying to me, just get more cats. It's really a whole combination. But yeah, I think this is what your garden is for. It's to invite different wildlife, whether it be good or bad, into your space and to be able to share it.
I was also reading with interest yesterday an article, and I've been following that, you know, there's been for the last couple of weeks that, you know, it's been about this Roundup, and I'm not too sure I know that in South Africa. Has it been banned already on, or, you know, from, you know, from our, you know, stores, garden centers and so forth, because there was concerns about, you know, using it and perhaps leading to cancer.
Yeah, it hasn't been banned in our garden centers yet. And I think what the manufacturers have done for, or some of the manufacturers have done, is they've made it into, so it's not that you just spray it everywhere. And the one manufacturer has almost made it like into a roll-on. So you can do it very specifically onto your weeds, maybe in your paving, or so the amount that you use is so tiny, and it really is just going to focus on that plant and kill it, and not go and sit in the soil and, you know, those type of things. Because I think when people used to spray it randomly, that's when you have a problem. And I know we had a customer who brought a deformed rose in once. And we said to her, you know, have you used Roundup anyway? And she said, no, no, she doesn't use it. And then we found out, we were chatting, and she said, oh, no, she saw her neighbor was using it on their paving. And so it was actually just in the water vapor, and it came across and must have landed on her rose and made it slightly deformed. But as I say, if you use it correctly and according to the instructions, we've never had any problems with it, and it is a very, there's such a thing as, it's very effective, that would be the right word for it, to try and get rid of really unwanted plants in a specific area.
Yes, but I think there's some concerns, and if you are going to be used to use it, like you said, judicious, and use it, you know, if you take on the manufacturer's, you know, instructions, there won't be any challenges. But if you're going to be just using it at random, it may then lead to other consequences.
Yeah, I think the temptation is, you know, when you are using pesticides, is you think, you read the instructions and you think, oh no, my pests are worse than that. 1 millimeter, that's really not going to help. And so you think, okay, well, I will put 2 milliliters in my 10-liter watering can or whatever it might be. Because, and I think it's just human nature, is that temptation, because you just think it can't make a difference. And then when you, and actually if you just did it properly, you would see it does make a difference very well. And that's why the instructions are there. And if we do use them, they can be very, very effective. But don't try and be the hero and double up and make it stronger because you think it's going to work better. It will work at the concentration that you read in the instruction bottle.
I think so. That's why it's so important to read, especially when you're using some of these type of things that become toxic, that you follow, you know, the manufacturer's instructions.
Yes,
that's what it's there for.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, you know, we get into that type of the year. Is it still too early, or do you think, you know, we should get into a regimen of pruning? Is that the right time or not for roses and stone fruits and all others, or do you think it's we should still wait for another 2 weeks?
Our roses were pruned this last week, so a big thank you to Ludwig. But, yeah, so we have started. We always think after the 15th is when you start pruning your roses. So we started pruning, and I wouldn't prune my stone fruit just yet. I think I would wait for those until the first week or last week of July, first week of August. But roses are so hardy, and they really need a good haircut. I mean, even our roses this year, I mean, even when we pruned them, they still looked magnificent. We had beautiful big blossoms on them. They really flowered wonderfully. Their foliage wasn't always fantastic, but we had really good blooms on our roses this year. So I think they need a good haircut after putting so much out into their blooms to just, you know, consolidate the plant, strengthen the growing, making the roots stronger so that it can go and look for more nutrients in the soil. So I would start pruning, yeah, within the next week or two.
And like you said, stone fruits, and some of those that now already have blossoms, what should be done with them?
So if they're already starting to blossom, then you definitely need to almost try and prune them before, because as soon as you start, you don't want them to put out blossoms, which is using energy on branches that you're going to prune out. So if you have seen that they've got blossoms, then get your secateurs out and try and prune them, you know, especially in the middle, so that you can get your fruit on the outside of the plant and your fruit can get as much light as possible. So, I would prune them if you can.
Sorry about that, but Carrie, those particular branches that have the blossoms on them, not to touch them, is that correct?
No, for those branches that do have blossoms. And because as soon as you've got blossoms on, it means the tree's already in spring mode.
Mm-hmm.
And so unless you're not going to prune it at all and you're going to wait for and do a mild pruning, you know, once your fruit has come through in December, November, December, January, you would actually have to prune even if they have got blossoms on now.
Okay, and what about citrus? You know, citrus are still, you know, bearing, they're laden with fruit. What should be done with them?
So citrus is enjoy your fruit. You know, most of your citrus now, we don't prune. We just, as I say, love the fruit that's coming on them. And, oh, it is. We've had lemons. I mean, I'm drinking lemon and honey for breakfast, for lunch, and for dinner. It's one of my favorite drinks at the moment. But most of your citrus will finish fruiting probably around end of September, maybe, except your lemon eurekas, which fruit all year round. And then you can always prune those. But at the moment, just really enjoy the fruit that's coming off your fruit trees.
What about the limes?
The limes as well. I mean, our limes have got tiny little limes on them. I can't wait for them to actually grow bigger and change. So those ones, you know, you could also, if you're finding your fruit is not developing as fast as you want, then you could feed with a nice organic fertilizer. At this time of the year, a 315 would be really good. But generally, as I said, all your citrus, we just leave it at the moment. We don't do any pruning of citrus at this time of the year.
Thank you very much. We're going to go for a quick commercial break. When we come back, it'll just be a couple of minutes and we continue.
Okay, perfect.
Thanks.
See you soon. Bye.
Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome back. And if you'd like to join our conversation, number to dial this morning, 854-1548. And we've got Kerry Goodwin sharing some wonderful ideas. And remember that if there's any particular query that is bugging you, that may be, yes, insects, any other question, remember, call the number again, 854-1548. Hi, good morning, Kerry.
Good morning again.
Yes, I'm saying if there's anything bugging us with all the bugs around. Yes, Kerry. Is it still time for us to put in, spring bulbs, or is it too late?
I would say it's too late now. We actually did have a customer asking them about them yesterday, and I was saying, you know, the bulbs are not going to have time to perform their true function, one, because they needed the cold, and we might not have the cold again, or the cold's going to come just when they, you know, look in their best. So I would have said rather, if you haven't planted your spring bulbs, keep them for next year.
Okay, when you come now to seeds, you know, should we start looking at seeds already for, you know, spring, and whether it be for flowering or vegetables? Is this the right time to start with seeds, or is it still a bit early?
It's also a bit too early for your seeds. You know, all the seeds that we planted are doing really nicely. I see a lot of them. The Macquarie daisies are just looking gorgeous everywhere. also rather enjoy the winter seeds that you planted and the flowers that are there. You know, you do get some of your all-round seed, like your nice leafy greens for your veggie gardens. Those you could plant any time. But, you know, your spring vegetables and seeds, like your tomatoes and basil, like you say, which is still growing beautifully in your garden, those sort of things, you know, rather wait until mid-August when they come available and you're going to plant them. And because you really want to, when you plant something, you want planting success. You don't want to be disappointed that maybe you planted it too early and it doesn't grow. So those really like the warmer weather. So I would wait a little while and then plant them in about a month's time or 6 weeks' time. And then you'll have great tomatoes and great pumpkins and squashes and those sort of things.
Yeah, so wait just for the winter, you know, whatever it is in your garden to sort of die off, and then you can continue. Now, yes. The other question that we have is that, you know, and I think you've raised it, is with regards to food security, it's still very high on the agenda. I was looking at what has come out from INSA, from Chelsea, and I think that that's still very much part of the feature of many gardens, not only locally but internationally, where everybody's now going towards planting, whether it's in a mixed vegetable or mixed garden or in a specific vegetable patch, but food security is high on the agenda. Is that correct?
Very, very much so. I mean, I think that's probably one of our top sellers, whether it be seeds or seedlings or fruit trees, which we've spoken about. People are really looking, and it doesn't matter the size of their gardens. We had a customer yesterday who was looking for an apple tree. And I was saying to him, you know what's lovely with the apple tree is that you can espaliate it. So you could have a balcony garden, put a beautiful apple tree in a pot, and then you put it against your, what's separating you from your neighbor or something. And especially with the apple trees, when you buy them young, then you can just bend those branches and they grow against the wall. And he was like, really? I said, yes. And it's becoming very popular to grow your own. I mean, it's been popular for ages, but now it's almost like becoming trendy, like being a bonsai specialist. You know, so people are trying to look for new and different ways to grow fruit and veggies. And there's so many different fruit and veggies. We don't have the usual, you know, spinach, lettuce, and tomatoes. You can get little black tomatoes and yellow pear tomatoes, and then you get, you know, bright light spinach. And all, we've spoken about them before, all the mizus and tatsois. And I mean, what you could eat from your garden is amazing. It's just, and I think really we have so many people who are coming in and choosing different vegetables. And at both garden centers, actually, we have planted up vegetables which ourselves and our team get to pick the fruit and veggie to take home. And sometimes I pick some of the leaves and I'm thinking, oh, goodness, this is really tart, like the red mustard. But it's just so nice to be able to have the variety that you can find in your own garden and not having to always go to the shops to look for it now.
And just speaking about the oriental vegetables, I must say I took a chance, and this year it's doing fantastically well. You know, you've gotten there, and like you said, you can just go out any time, you know, pluck a couple of leaves, and before you know, you've got a wonderful salad of a different taste.
Yes. And I think because we're all eating healthy as well, you know, whether you're putting them in your smoothies or in your stir fries or in your salads, it's just giving you these different explosions in your mouth. I have to always taper them off with some pansy flowers as well, because sometimes the bite is so much that I'm like, please bring on some sweetness. But it's just so nice to be able to go out into the garden. At home, I have to share my garden with the chickens. So now the chickens and I have a race to see who can get to the vegetable first, because they are just also loving all these leafy greens that are in the vegetable patch. And I'm thinking, no, no, those are for me. Don't eat them. So, but, yeah, we have a love-hate relationship.
You know, you're talking about espaliers. You know, I think it's such a fantastic idea, but people are a bit scared to sort of venture in that, you know, to take perhaps a young apple tree and, you know, try it against a wall and so forth. Is it a very specific technique, or is it quite easy?
Actually, it's much easier than people think, because it is just your young branches, which are still very supple. So you can't go and get an older apple tree and do it. But with your younger branches, and you just bend it slowly, and then you use those nasal nails and guts, and you attach your the branches to your wall, which has got the nasal nail and the gut on it. And it's, as I say, very, very simple. But I think a lot with gardening. I know when I, before, you know, and I was lucky, I grew up in a gardening family. But my most learning curve came from actually when I went and got my hands dirty myself and planted things. And I mean, when we were very young, I remember planting nasturtium seeds. And to me, I still remember that, and I still love nasturtiums in the garden. But it's actually having to do it yourself and try it. And then the reward in yourself in terms of just being, oh, I can do this. And I think in a lot of the garden centers, the teams, they are so helpful. You know, they'll be able to give you the right advice and say to you, this is how you do it. They can show you. So really just speak to the people. What sometimes scares me is a lot of people go onto the internet and then they find overseas websites. And then they bring that information into the garden center and say, oh, look at these plants. I mean, even when I'm looking at the beautiful plants that have been publicized at Chelsea, I'm thinking, wow, you know, some of these plants in South Africa, we don't see very often anymore. They've either, the South Africans didn't like them or they came and they went. And so I'm hoping for spring, a lot of the plants that Chelsea was speaking about are going to come back into fashion because, as I say, we didn't choose them. And so that's going to be quite nice. You really need to just, gardening is all about getting your hands dirty and trying and experimenting. And I always find plants are very forgiving. So they do give you a chance, and they, you know, if you make a mistake, they still actually grow for you, and maybe your apple's going to be, you know, not a perfectly round apple that you might find in one of our supermarkets, but it's going to be way more tasty than the ones that we find in our supermarkets.
No, definitely. And, you know, just talking about Chelsea, what was your takeaway from Chelsea? I found some fantastic ideas. The one that really sort of intrigued me, and I know I've spoken to him about last week too, was the insect hotels, you know, trying to insert to encourage all these different insects into your garden, whether it's bees, dragonflies, and so forth. And I thought, what a wonderful idea, because here you're now working with nature, and you're having this, you know, big, you know, environment-friendly, you know, garden or space for all these things to thrive.
I thought that was a beautiful garden. And they created all these little nooks and crannies and, as you say, the insect hotels, and then you get the bee hotels. And even, you know, within your gardens at the moment, like we have a lot of the robins. And so we've got a little robin nesting box, which actually you don't put in a tree. You put it under one of your shrubs, because the robins run around and look for worms in your soil. So there is definitely, and I find at the moment, even in the garden centers, that the insects are, beneficial insects now, are also quite prolific, you know, and that's encouraging. I mean, we see bees on all the flowers. I see them looking for the pollen in the aloes and the hibiscus on the camellias. Because even our hibiscus are still flowering when we worry about our seasons being skewed. You know, so there's just bees everywhere. Saying to our team, we've got beautiful flowering aloes, but the birds are actually eating the petals of the aloes because they're also probably looking for some pudding or something sweet. And so, I'm saying, you know, I was worried that the aloe flowers are just going off, but there the little sparrows are busy nibbling at the petals. I'm like, hello, those are for our customers. They're not for you. And then I have to take a step back and think, okay, everything's for everyone. But so, as you say, to have that wildlife in your garden, I mean, when we woke up this morning and then I saw all the birds on the bird feeders, I was like, yay, this is great. So, and I mean, the birds are quite thirsty. So I'm hoping a lot of people have put, even if it's just water in a bird bath, or our birds are drinking from our nectar feeders, and I don't treat them to nectar every week. They get 1 week nectar, 1 week water, 1 week nectar. And from there, they're actually almost queuing up in the garden center to try and get nectar or water from the feeders. So our birds are definitely at this time of the year where the grass is, you know, there's no seeds on the grass heads at the moment. They're all barren. And so they're really looking for food. So if you can encourage that, and that's what we saw in that Chelsea garden, was looking for, so you invite the different insects in, which will encourage different birds in, which will complete your garden, and then hopefully get rid of all those pests we were talking about earlier naturally. You know, you'll have the ladybirds that will be eating the aphids. And that's what you're trying to create in your garden by having little niches for each insect to make a home.
And what about the medicinal garden, you know, the medicinal herbs and so forth? If you know, there were a number of herbs and plants that had medicinal uses and you could use for distillation of non-alcoholic beverages and so forth. And there was I think it was the Seedlip Garden. It was designed by Dr. Catherine McDonald. What do you think about that one?
Well, I always think there's a lovely thing. Also came from the UK, and I'm going to say it, but it sounds terrible. It was Grow Your Own Drugs, and it was a TV program.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, that's what you want to encourage people to do, is to go and, you know, when we plant parsley, I plant it as a medicinal thing. It's not for the to look pretty on the side of my plate. You know, I have parsley quite a lot in the food that I eat. And so you do want people to use their gardens for functional purposes. I think that's what, when I looked at Chelsea, is that your garden isn't only pretty anymore. It's how your garden can become part of your lifestyle, that you use it on a daily basis. You know, so being able to go, especially in the winter, you know, with this, again, not only the plants are getting the bugs, but humans are having terrible bugs with the flu. So to be able to go and pick some of the beautiful herbs that you might have in your herb garden and put them in a tea to soothe your sore throat. Those are the things that you want to be able to do. You know, I was chatting to a customer yesterday about the lavender, and I was saying, if you're battling to sleep, just go and pick a lavender leaf and put it under your pillow when you go to sleep at night. And it will be so soothing and relaxing that you'll probably sleep a whole lot better and not have to go to a pharmacy to go and get something to worry about how am I going to sleep.
Yes, so, you know, your garden could definitely come to that type. And looking at some of the, you know, plants that you said caught your attention, what caught your attention? You would mention some of the things that may have seemed to have gone out of fashion from South Africa. What are those plants?
So the one that I really liked was the lupins, which I always remember from New Zealand, but it's one of my mom's favorite plants. So those are coming back, which, you know, nice tall flowering plants. We don't only have the short flowering ones. We get some nice tall ones. The armeria, which always makes me think of little lollipops. Also a spring flowering plant that we in this country, we get them in pinks and whites. And they just, yeah, basically these little lollipops on sticks. And I thought, how interesting is that? Because I almost want to say probably a lot of South African growers decided to stop growing them because they weren't selling so white, selling so well. And you've got these beautiful armeria. Then the one that also, you don't find very often, and a lot of people think it's an indigenous plant, it's called a lichnis, and it's got grey foliage and it's very drought resistant, and so you normally buy it for your foliage, but then when it flowers, it's got either these beautiful purple or white flowers, and again it's a nice tall flowering plant. So when I see these, I think, oh wow. And then also your green, you know, this year the colour of the year is greenery, and in quite a few of the gardens they've got mosses, so it's the textures in your gardening and creating different feeling but using green. You know, so your sejanus, you get your golden sejana and then you get your green one. And those are both just different types of mosses in places which might be moist in your garden, you know, under a tap or where you always seem to have a high water table. So I thought that was quite interesting. And then, you know, South Africa did very well this year in Chelsea.
Yes, yes, of course, we came again, I think it was our 36th gold, is that correct?
I thought it was 35, but yes, 35 or 36, and then we got the President's Award.
Yes, yes, and that was fantastic, and I haven't been able to speak to, what's the name, but they always do so well, the team does so, so well always.
Yes, and I think, you know, what highlighted for me is actually how people are loving our South African gardens, because, you know, that's a Kirstenbosch display, so it's showing you, it's highlighting the beautiful plants that we have in our own country that we must look at and cherish. And we had a customer last week who was saying to me, oh, you know, I tried protea plants, but sometimes they just don't work. And I said, you do have to realize that proteas, a lot of them are still from the Western Cape. And so we would need to mimic those type of garden situations. And I think sometimes in our Gauteng gardens, maybe we give them too much water in the summer. But we do have beautiful proteas, and a lot of the fynbos plants are adapting to our Gauteng climate.
Carry on, sorry.
I was going to say, just jumping across it, but one of the gardens that I loved the most was the Mexican garden. I loved the bold colors and the agaves and the succulents, and then they have this aquamarine like pool in front of it, because water was also quite a high feature in the Chelsea gardens, looking for not so much as swimming pools, but either like splash pools or pools for birds or natural pools. And so I like the bold color of the plants, the burgundies and the coppers and the magentas, of the plants that were coming through in Chelsea, they were kind of like jump up and look at me, I'm beautiful and I need to be in your garden. And I quite enjoyed that from the Chelsea gardens.
What also, you know, stuck out for me was, you know, that most of these gardens had a wow factor, something in there that, you know, any person who came to your garden would say, wow, whether it was a sculpture, whether it was a tree or something, and I found it was quite interesting because many of times we forget about that, you know, that we can create just one factor, whether it be with a sculpture or with a plant, a talking point around the garden.
Yes, I actually think that's quite important, is because your gardens do look beautiful, but as you say, you just need that one thing that distinguishes you or shows your personality or your character in the garden. And it could be an aloe melati in a beautiful pot, you know, if you have a little space. It could be your vegetables growing in a different way or in certain pots, you know, like terracotta pots, but stuck on your wall rather than in the garden. So I think there's, and as you say, the sculptures. I mean, one of the horse gardens where they did the plants that are horses like and are suitable for horses, and then the plants that are poisonous to horses. But the sculptures in those gardens are amazing. I mean, and I think when I look at a lot of shopping centers at the moment, the sculptures around them are actually enhancing the gardens. I look at the new Kyalami Center.
Mm-hmm.
It's got beautiful sculptures outside. And so people are looking at art in their garden now too. And the mixing of the art and the garden together to bring out the best of the plants with the sculptures.
And two other gardens that sort of inspired me was the Taste Garden, doing the one that had the strawberries and the beans and the cherry tomatoes and all of that.
Yeah, you're making me hungry already.
I thought that was a wonderful idea, but that was, you know, done under sort of a greenhouse condition. But whatever it is, I mean, that's an indication that people are looking at. Again, we're talking of sustainability and food security there.
Mm. Yeah, well, we've actually, at the Keith Kirsten, we've got a special on herbs at the moment. So you buy three and you get the fourth one free. And I'm so loving that so many people are using it. And the one customer I had on her trolley, and I was saying to her, oh, you've only got three herbs. And she says, no, I've got four. And I was like, looked again, and there was a strawberry. And then I forget that, you know, strawberry falls into the fruit. I always think of it as a plant in bags or in a hanging basket, all that sort of thing. And I felt like such an idiot. I thought, oh, my goodness, how can I not know that the strawberry falls into this wonderful promotion that we're having? So, but, yes, I think, you know, and there again, it's your fruit that's adding color to your garden. So that could be your, I mean, what people are doing with strawberries in terms of hanging them in baskets so that they can keep it and it's not the worms that sometimes get their strawberries, or putting strawberry planters have made a nice comeback.
Yes, that has made a very big comeback. And, you know, finally we found that, you know, that they were pinned to all the senses, the five senses. So, you know, went to the garden and whether it was, you know, the sense of taste or touch or smell or sight and, you know, the sound. And I think that was also, you know, and when I looked at, you know, I was thinking about the birds this morning chirping, and that, you know, that you brought the sound in already, and there was, if you had water, and there's so many other things that you could do to enhance those five senses and that experience in the garden.
Yes, yeah. At the one garden center, I've put some of the buddleia, because the buddleia are flowering beautiful at the moment, and you get that whiff of honey when you walk past them. It's almost like the alyssum flowers. And I put them quite close to the entrance, and then somebody said to me, oh, what's that horrible smell? I was like, that's buddleia, and it's a gorgeous smell. And then when I showed her the plant, she's like, okay, I understand the smell, but the plants look all wild and woolly. I was like, that's the beauty of them. I really had to sell these plants to the customers. But it was because I was using my senses, as you were saying, to enjoy the garden, and so I was trying to share it with other people. But obviously different people have different favorites of things that they like.
No, definitely, I must say to you. But again,
pardon?
I said, again, our gardens have to speak to us and, you know, tell us exactly what it is. And I think it's so important that you get into any particular garden and you can get, whether it's a taste of, whether it's a sense of taste, smell, whatever it is, but it's there, and it's there for everyone to enjoy.
Yes, no, absolutely. And I'm loving at the moment a lot of young children are getting into their gardens. We see a lot of families coming into the garden center and, you know, exploring which plants they would like and getting to choose them. And it could be a little succulent or a trendy cactus or a pansy flower that they've tasted and they want to eat. And I like that the gardening is becoming a family activity. It's not just for the moms who used to do it, and, you know, something that you learn down the family. Everyone is enjoying gardening at the moment.
An interesting article I read about, just about the youth again, yes, it was permaculture, and they're saying that's catching up quite, especially in certain parts of Europe, where young people are getting involved in permaculture. And I thought it was fantastic, because we need to get young people involved in whatever way they could, and I thought this was a wonderful way to start off. And, you know, when looking at the, you know, Chelsea overall, it was make sustainable choices for a more eco-friendly garden. I think that's what is important.
Very, very important. I think that's the way that you have to look at your garden. Is because everyone's going to be enjoying it. So, as you say, the more eco-friendly you can make it and the more in tune with the environment in which you're living and how you can enhance it to the better for everyone is what you have to do.
Where about are you this morning?
I'm actually at our growing farm. I'm coming to choose plants for the week, for the nurseries.
Tell us something about this. Where about is the growing farm and how, what's the climate like there?
So we're actually in Kaya Sands. Okay. And we have a whole lot of tunnels to control our climate, because we've already started growing all those beautiful begonias that you were talking about and New Guinean patience and those sort of things. So we're growing them in false environments. But then that's one part of the growing farm. And then the other part of the growing farm, we have all the pansies and the violas and the vegetables. And so I'm going to go and have a look at those to see. And then we've started a little bit on some succulents and some other perennials. So I'm just going to go and have a good walk around and see how everything is growing, because I love to watch the process of plants growing up. And that's what's so wonderful about being involved in the growing farm as well as in the retail, is you get to see from the seed, which is tiny, how you get these most amazing plants. And I think some people don't realize the effort that goes into actually producing the beautiful plants that you find in the garden centers.
And finally, what have you got on special at the garden center?
So at the Keith Kirsten, we're promoting compost, which is just a lovely thing to do, because I think so many people's soils are so not good anymore, and they worry that their plants that they're planting aren't fantastic. So we've got compost at R18.50 a bag. And then at Colourful Splendor, where it's normally a bit colder, we have all our pots and potting soil on special, all less 30%. And that's to just encourage people who might have small environments or who have maybe moved inside to just enjoy their plants and move them around wherever they want, and hence the potting soil and pots are less 30% at Colourful Splendor.
And just tell us where Keith Kirsten is, because I know it's a wonderful environment to go in, especially if it's a warm day, like we've had the last couple of Sundays, go out there and just to browse and walk around. I think you'd be inspired.
So that is on the... Waterfall Drive, corner of Waterfall Drive and Country Estate Drive, just below the Mall of Africa.
Okay, so it's just Midrand. And just below the Mall of Africa in Midrand, and it's open this afternoon, this morning?
It's open until 4 o'clock today. Okay. And we were just celebrating, we've been there for 1 year now, so ourselves and the other restaurants around us, we had our birthday party last week, and all of us continued our specials for this week. So even if you go to any of the restaurants there, you know, Turn and Tender has some beautiful steaks on special, and Nostimo's has some beautiful pizzas that you can taste, and then we've got lovely specials in the garden center. Even our aloes are less 30%. So it's just to encourage people to enjoy their winter gardens, hopefully.
Well, is it late? I'm not too sure about winter garden. I don't know what to say, but whatever it is, you enjoy your garden. But thank you very much for all that information. You take care. Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
And that was a wonderful program this morning. We spoke, and you know, she's given us some wonderful ideas. It was Carrie, and, you know, when we talk about seasons, we're not too sure, but if you are and you have some of those sensitive plants, remember tomorrow there may be a bit of a cold snap, and it may be, you know, bring along some frost, so do take all the necessary precautions. Make sure that you have some frost cover for those plants. And we've got another 5.5, speak about 6.5 weeks before we get into spring. That's all for me, until we meet again, inshallah. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.